language lovers and word nerds will enjoy the latest book by Martha Barnett, co-host of Public Radio's A Way with Words. I'm David James. Next on 2 Main Street, my conversation with Martha about her new book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. We'll hear how this Kentucky girl, who studied ancient Greek, landed the gig on a nationwide radio show. We'll also hear how a caller to the show ended up being her wife. And Martha will also talk about her journalism career, covering big stories, including artificial heart recipient Bill Schrader of Jasper, and Iraq War POW Jessica Lynch, and find out if the Away With Words team was ever stumped by a caller question. 2 Main Street is next, presented by the Berger Rind Group at Baird Private Wealth Management. From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Well, if there's one word to describe today's show, it's mellifluous. Mellifluous is an adjective describing something pleasing to the ear, flowing like honey, smooth and soothing. Mellifluous is given the credit it deserves in the new book, Friends with Words, by Martha Barnett. Martha is co-host of the nationwide public radio show, A Way with Words, airing here on WNIN-FM, Fridays from noon to 1, and Sundays from 2 to 3. Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett were the 2024 guests at the WNIN Gala. Joining me now to talk about her new book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land, is Martha Barnett from her closet studio in San Diego, California. You're in the closet, Martha?
Yes, I call it my cludio. It's a portmanteau. It's a blend of the words closet and studio. It seems like more and more of us in public radio are doing that. So I have a big commute from the bedroom to the closet. It's not too bad.
Well, you're not winded then. That's good. That's good. Okay,
no.
on page 71, chapter 4, Word Origins, you gushed over your favorite word, mellifluous. What's so special about that word?
Oh, I did indeed. I'm so glad you brought that up, David. It is a beautiful word. I mean, it's a beautiful word to say. You know, it's got that L in there, mellifluous, mm-hmm. and the S on the end. So it has what I think of as a good mouth feel. But it's more wonderful than that because it comes from the Latin word for honey. And it literally means flowing with honey. The M-E-L, mel, means honey in Latin, and any Spanish speakers out there are going to know it's related to the Spanish word miel. So something that's mellifluous is easy on the ears, sounds wonderful, and is just sweet and flowing with honey.
It rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah. It's
now,
one of my favorites.
You lovingly mention a mentor in your book, a retired professor who helped you master ancient Greek. So tell me about this polyglot Latvian friend of yours.
Oh, Professor Leonard Lutkowski. He was a professor of classics at Louisville's Bellarmine University for many, many years. And he was an immigrant from Latvia who had spoke several languages, at least a dozen, and was comfortable in many more. But anyway, he was a retired professor when I met him. And the reason I met him was because I was trying to study ancient Greek in college. I'd had some Latin growing up in Louisville, and I decided that it was time to try my hand at ancient Greek because I thought it would be as easy as Latin. But it was really, really hard, and I almost flunked the class. So instead of flunking it, I told myself I would go back home to Louisville and try to find, you know, some starving graduate student who could tutor me in ancient Greek. And I didn't find a starving graduate student. I found this elderly man who knew so much and was a born teacher, and he agreed to teach me ancient Greek on Monday nights, and I was glad I had Monday nights free because he taught different languages every night of the week. to people, and he did it all for free. You know, he was one of those born teachers, and I ended up studying with him for 12 years.
Wow.
Until his death, and as you might guess, I fell in love with ancient Greek and went back and took all the Greek courses I could. And what he did for me was to show me all the connections between and among words that derive from a prehistoric that spread across Europe and part of Asia, and it the words in those languages go back to that, and you can see all these different connections among words in Italian and Irish and Russian and English too. And so it was this thrilling way to learn about language. I had never been taught that way before, and so pretty much everything I do now on the show is kind of a tribute to Professor Witkowski.
Well, you know, Martha, I had a Spanish teacher in high school, Leonila Badger, and I learned more about English language grammar taking those Spanish classes. Isn't that strange how you do that?
Yeah, that makes sense, because you start looking at your own language differently when you start looking at how other languages are put together.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand you were reading Oedipus in ancient Greek, is that right?
We were.
Wow. And Oedipus means swollen foot?
It does indeed. Yes, that was one of the first things he taught me, because I had gone to him with my my Greek first year book, and it had all these really boring vocabulary lists and drills. And, you know, the first time you go into a Greek class, you learn words like a Greek word for bowstring or armies, and it wasn't very interesting to me, and it certainly wasn't conversational, you know, like your Spanish class. You can't ask where's the bathroom or anything or you know, what's on your menu. You can't do that with somebody unless they're, you know, 2,000 years old, a 2,000-year-old ancient Greek. So when I went to study at Professor Lutkowski's home, he took my book of dreary drills and he just kind of threw it aside and said, we won't need that, we'll read this. And he hands me a copy of Oedipus Rex in the original Greek. And I thought, this was nuts. How am I going to read this? But he said, let's start with the name Oedipus. And indeed, as you said, it means swollen foot, because his feet were injured when he was a baby. And so they were swollen ever after. And he said, you have in English, do you not, the word edema? And I said, well, yeah, edema, it means swelling. And he said, is related to Oedipus. The edi in Oedipus is related to the edema. It is actually regarding swelling. And the pus in Oedipus, pus means foot in ancient Greek and is related to words like octopus.
Word nerds are enjoying this, definitely. Okay, now before we go back to your book, Adventures in Language Land, Friends with Words, let's talk about your career in journalism. I found this interesting. A couple of big stories. In 1984, Bill Schrader of Jasper, Indiana, received a Jarvik 7 artificial heart. Now, he died in 1986 at age 52. He lived 620 days with that heart, and you did a story on him, kind of a lengthy story. How did you get that assignment?
Well, actually, I had been a feature writer at the Louisville Times, the late, great Louisville Times, and somebody left the medical beat at the newspaper, and they looked around and thought, well, Martha has a lot of Latin and Greek. She can probably go talk to doctors. And so I started covering the medical beat in Louisville, and I watched actually the first attempt at in vitro fertilization in Louisville, and a lot of other cool medical stories. But I was about to leave the paper, actually, to go study ancient Greek, and this big story broke, because Dr. William DeVries was bringing his artificial heart program to Louisville, because Humana had made a deal with him to come and do artificial heart experiments. And so I'm sure that some of your listeners remember that that the second recipient of a Jarvik 7 artificial heart was indeed Bill Schrader from Jasper. So I had been covering that story, and it was a huge story at the time. You know, the cover of Life magazine. There were film crews that came to Louisville from Japan and Brazil, because it was a big story at the time. But then, you know, the rest of the media moved on, and I thought, nobody's telling this family story.
So what did you find out about the story that people didn't know?
Well, you know, he did tremendously well for the first 18 days. He was talking back to President Reagan on the phone and demanding his Social Security check, and he was drinking beer on national television. Bill Schroeder was doing beautifully, and then, unfortunately, he suffered a shower of clots from the valves on the artificial heart that went to his brain and caused a terrible stroke and series of strokes. And so then he pretty much became a stroke patient, in addition to being an artificial heart patient. And it was absolutely grueling, as you can imagine, for the family. He lived to see some of the goals that he had wanted to live for, like the birth of a baby and a wedding, but at a tremendous cost.
You know, Martha, I don't know if you know this or not, but there's a display in the Du Bois County Museum in Jasper featuring Bill Schroeder's life, and your book's in there.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, in the display case.
Wow.
There you go. Okay.
That was a long time ago.
Now, another big story involves a young female soldier just days on the ground in Iraq. This was in 2003. Her convoy ambushed. And tell me about your interview with PFC Jessica Lynch.
Oh, that was a big one, too. Yes, her convoy was ambushed, and she was taken, across enemy lines and ended up in a hospital and was eventually liberated by American soldiers. And then she came back to her home in a holler in West Virginia, and a magazine sent me to interview her, and it was the first magazine interview that she'd done, and it was deeply moving, and it was tough. She went through a lot there and experienced a lot of trauma, but I understand that she has recovered and made a wonderful life for herself.
Yeah, I know a lot of her fellow soldiers were killed in that attack, and she was seriously wounded as well.
Yes.
And I think she even said in an interview that the Iraqi doctors wanted to amputate her leg.
And she,
Yeah, and she said no to that, and they agreed not to amputate her leg. Wow.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah. Yeah, I was really struck by how tiny she was, too. Mm-hmm. She was almost like a little porcelain doll or something.
Well, she's like
obviously very, very tough.
Yeah, like 19 years old, I think, sent over mm-hmm. there. Just a couple of days on the ground in Iraq, and this terrible event happened. But she has rebounded. How did you get this gig at Away With Words? I understand you and Grant Barrett were not the original host, correct?
Correct. Yeah, the original hosts of the show, which started here in San Diego at KPBS, were Richard Lederer, who's written, I don't know, over 50 books about language, a very, very funny guy with a PhD in English and a vaudevillian sense of humor. And the other co-host was Charles Harrington Elster, who unfortunately has since died, but he was an expert on pronunciation and very much a stickler for grammar. And they had this show that started in 1998, and then Charlie left the show, and they were searching for somebody to replace him, and did a nationwide search. 85 candidates found me in Louisville writing books about word origins. And I terrible public speaking phobia, but I thought, my gosh, if I could share my passion for language with lots of people every single week, how cool would that be? So I took a real risk in trying out for the show. I was absolutely terrified, but I thought, you know, I'm either going to sink or swim, and I ended up swimming.
Well, and the rest is history. Like, what, two decades now?
Can you believe that?
That's amazing.
I was writing Friends with Words, and I was, you know, thinking about, okay, so I've been doing the show for, and then it hit me that I've been doing it for more than 20 years now. Mm-hmm. So I guess we were doing something right.
Certainly. Now, still to come, we're going to learn more about Martha's Kentucky roots, her recent trip to England. Did she pick up any new slang there? Have she and her co-host ever been stumped by a caller? And how a caller to the show became Martha's wife? I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is an unapologetic word nerd, Martha Barnett, co-host of Away With Words, heard here on WNIN and nationwide. She's also author of her latest book, Friends With Words, Adventures in Language Land, published by Abrams Press of New York. Martha is speaking to us from her home in San Diego, a closet turned into a studio, now living in California, but a Kentucky girl at heart. Tell me about growing up in, now it's Louisville, not Louisville,
right.
After King Louis, but it's Louisville. And your parents, I think, were both educators, is that right?
That's right, yeah. And I would get in big trouble if I didn't say Louisville.
So, that's right.
So I'm going to call it Louisville. But yes, my mother was an English teacher. She taught at Barrett Middle School for many, many years, and was a fun, vivacious teacher that I still hear from her students about how much they loved being in her classes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's neat.
She made, well, yeah, and I try to carry on her tradition, too, because she made learning about grammar fun and learning about English fun. She would, if somebody had trouble spelling the word cemetery, they couldn't remember if it ended A-R-Y or E-R-Y, she would say, just think of running through a cemetery at night. You go ee all the way through. She would say silly things like that, but the kids would remember. Mm-hmm. So you know, I try to emulate her to some degree. And my dad taught for 25 years at the Southern Baptist Seminary in Louisville, and he was a wonderful educator as well. He had a hard scrabble beginning, being born in a log cabin, literally, at the foot of a mountain in western North Carolina, and worked in a textile mill for many years there, and derived a real sense of social justice from that. And so he eventually became a professor of ethics at the seminary.
This is almost like an Abe Lincoln story, born in a log cabin. My God. And he becomes a professor. Wow, that's a great story.
Well, yeah, indeed. He went on to do graduate work at Harvard and Columbia. Wow. And and I think my favorite story about his years at the seminary is the fact that in the late 50s, early 60s, he came to admire the work of an activist in Atlanta and Montgomery, and invited him to come speak to his class. And 500 people ended up showing up for that talk because the guy he invited was Martin Luther King Jr.
Wow, that is a great story.
Yeah,
and I think
I've always said that if this place ever catches fire, the thing I'm going to grab is the framed photo of my dad and Martin Luther King having coffee together discussing civil rights strategy in the South.
that's wonderful. Now, did your dad have any Appalachian slang that he passed on?
Oh my goodness, yes, and in fact, his sister lived next door to us, and she was very much an Appalachian as well. So she would say all kinds of things that you know, I just picked up. I thought that was the way people talked, you know, might, could, and might, coulda, woulda, and playing the piano, and all that stuff just seemed perfectly natural to me. And today, when I hear an Appalachian accent, I just melt. It just sounds like home. You know, there's something so powerful, isn't there, about an accent from where you grew up? It just whisks you back in an instant.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, my wife was born in Hazard, Kentucky.
Ah, okay.
And her family moved to Indiana. But every once in a while, she'll say something to me like, you say, she'll say, you lie like a rug. And she'll say, "You're like a hog on ice." When I'm clumsy. So those are some great lines.
Yeah.
Okay, let's fast forward now to the present, your weekly radio show.
I'm sure
show.
You don't lie like a rug, though, David.
Well, I've been caught before. Let's go to your weekly radio show, Away With Words. Like we said, 2 decades on the air. How many episodes would that be?
Oh, my gosh. We are coming up on, I think, 500 episodes, and they're all on our website. We just got an email from a guy in Fish Creek, Wisconsin, who said, "I just want to tell you about my achievement. I've unlocked an achievement. I have listened to every single one of your episodes."
Oh my gosh.
Which was really funny because, you know, he went back to the very early episodes 20 years ago, and Grant and I were talking about things like, well, should email be hyphenated or not?
That's great. So, you guys probably haven't been stumped very often because you're so erudite. Any tough, really tough questions you had to research a lot?
Well, a lot of them are tough, and fortunately, we have a lot of great resources for research. Grant is an amazing researcher and has so many databases with so much data, which you hear about on the show. I'm thinking about, there are times when we're not sure about an answer and we will try to crowdsource it. One of the great things about this show is that it's pretty much a community of listeners. And if we don't know the answer or somebody is really eager to find out something, all these listeners will email us or call us or text us and chime in on that. And one of the stories you're making me think about is the fact that once we had a military veteran who was in a counseling program, and he was trying to talk about his feelings about the things that he had experienced, and what he was trying to find out if there was a word for. We often get, is there a word for this or that? And he wondered if there was a word for the point between utter depression, utter despair, and euphoria. What's the middle point? What is the neutral point where you don't feel either of those? And weirdly enough, David, that was the call that generated the most responses. People were trying to help come up with language for that that neutral position, and it's a lot harder than you think when you're talking about feelings.
Did you come up with one?
Well, I think my favorite, and there were just so many, and I'm trying to remember what they all were, but the one that I liked most was just still. There was something about the word still, just you know, people were saying peace, P-E-A-C-E, and
still, I like that.
I do too. Just that midpoint, and so we've kept in touch with him because we're still trying to figure out what that word is, and it puzzled both Grant and me that it was such a puzzle that so many people wanted to chime in, and so many people had all these different, you know, whether they were psychiatric terms or just everyday terms or terms they made up. I love that about how talking about language can bring people together, and it sure did with that call.
Now, in your book, you mention another book, The Book of St. Albans, and I thought this was very interesting. 1486, one of the first printed books, I guess, and it has all these interesting terms for falconry and collective nouns. You have a murmuration of starlings.
Yeah, all these words that are collectives for animals in particular, but apparently the original book was written by, we think, we're not 100% sure, but we're pretty sure that this was the first book published by a woman, a nun named Juliana Berners, who put together all these, what they call terms of venery, which is how hunters used to talk about flocks and herds and more specific collections of animals. And she had a number of those, and then she had some odd ones too, like a superfluity of nuns. I'm not sure. I kind of like, you know, people have gotten in on the act there too, and come up with their own, like a wince of dentists, which I like.
Oh, I like that too. I found one here, The Unkindness of Ravens. Thought that was interesting.
What was that about? A shrewdness of apes?
Yeah, a skulk of foxes. It just goes on and on. I love these. I love them. They're just wonderful.
Yeah. And we actually have a clouder of cats here. We have four.
Oh, you have four cats? Oh, I love that. I love that.
So that's a clouder.
Oh, do they get along? Do the clouder get along?
They actually do. Hmm. Yeah, we live on a canyon, and there are lots of coyotes, and so we ended up rescuing this litter of feral cats and raised them and gave some away, but kept two. And they got added to the other ones that we already had. But they all get along, amazingly enough. They all have their own personalities, so one won't let us touch her. But other than that. They're great.
Well, here are some new dictionary words I found. Of course, there are new words that go into the dictionary every year, and they kind of reflect what's going on in society. AI washing, when companies falsely claim their products use artificial intelligence, AI washing. Dupe culture, sharing information about cheaper alternatives to expensive products. I like that.
Mm. I like that a lot. I don't know. I didn't know either of these. I'm very excited to learn them.
Here's one: bed rotting, just not getting out of bed, just rotten bed. This is a good one here too. Rage applying. Now, if you're in a bad work environment, this is when you apply for several new jobs at the same time.
Oh, I love that.
And
then if you don't get the jobs, then you quiet quit, right? Quiet quitting is another
that's
one.
That's right. And one that's self-explanatory, polycrisis, dealing with all kinds of crises at the same time. Okay. Now, recently, you told me you traveled to England. Did you pick up any new words or phrases that captured your attention over there?
Well, you know, what I picked up was a wonderful little book called 188 Words for Rain, because it's by Alan Connor, who is he's the crossword puzzle editor for the Guardian newspaper there, and it's just a wonderful book that actually goes around the British Isles and collects all these different words for different kinds of rain, like mizzle, which is a fine mist, and dreich, I think, or dreich, I don't even know how you say it, something in Scotland.
There's a lot of Scottish slang, yeah.
Yes, there's a lot of that. But the weird thing was that we were there for a couple of weeks, and it only rained once, and that was pretty much just mizzle.
Now, there's a chapter in your book, Friends with Words, featuring uplifting words that may alter a mood, calm a storm, or settle a troubled soul. I love the word susurration.
Mm-hmm.
A whispering sound like silk slippers on a hard floor. Is that susurration? Is that right? Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Susurration. Okay. And respair, fresh hope or recovery from despair. And halcyon?
Halcyon, yeah.
Halcyon, yes. Describing something calm or serene.
Right.
I'm feeling very still now in house counseling.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Now, my guest is Martha Barnett. She's co-host of A Way with Words and author of the new book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. We have more to talk about with Martha, how Martha met Bonnie, her wife, performing in a rock band. Did you do that, Martha? And overcoming the fear of public speaking. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. If you are just joining us, my guest is Martha Barnett, co-host of Away with Words and author of her latest book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. Now, Martha, you write in your book about your early dread of public speaking. Now you're speaking to a national audience. How did you overcome that fear, Martha?
Oh, first of all, I have to tell you how terrible that fear of public speaking was. You know, when my earlier books came out, I would try to talk to people about my books in bookstores and things like that. And I feel sorry for anybody who went to hear me, you know, friends who went to be supportive, because my mouth would dry out and my cheeks would stick to my teeth. And then it would sound like I had dentures because it was clicking. And then I would try to drink water and I would spill it all over myself. It was, I don't know why I had this terrible, terrible fear of public speaking, but I did. So part of getting over it, and actually speaking is one of my favorite things that I do now, the public speaking. I mean, when we had that event for WNIN, the gala there, it was fantastic. I had a great time with listeners there, and I love public speaking now. But I think what happened, part of it was realizing that it's not about me, that nobody really cares who you are. They want to get something from you, you know. And so I started to think of myself as sort of a conduit, mm-hmm. for just a pipe that provides information and entertainment. But the other thing that I did that really helped me, that was kind of scary to do, but I'm so glad I did, was I took improv classes. And improv is a very supportive environment. I highly recommend it. It's almost a way of life, you know, trying to you're always on stage with somebody else, and their job is to make you look good, and your job is to make them look good. So you focus on them rather than yourself. And you also learn that, you know, you can fail. Even if you fall on your face, you're still moving forward, and you know, you're failing in these really low stakes situations because you're on stage and you're pretending, and you know, if you pretend wrong, I mean, who cares? So it was a really good muscle building for public speaking, and I am pretty evangelical about improv because it did so much for me. And I think it's really good for people who do solitary work too. You know, the work of writing and actually hosting the radio show is pretty darn solitary. So it got me out of the house and interacting with people.
Now, we get to learn a lot about your life away from the microphone in the book. A couple of paragraphs about being in a rock band. Martha, that's fascinating. tell me about your wild rock band experience.
Yeah, well, during my years in Louisville, a band called Your Girlfriend with four other women. And we played all around Louisville and all around the South. I joined as a flute player because that was my instrument, but there really weren't any many flute songs that, round out a rock band. So at the time, I was the only, this is a long time ago, I was the only one in the band with a credit card, and we needed a keyboard player, so I bought a keyboard and started teaching myself, and we had a great time playing all kinds of different venues, mostly in Louisville. And actually, one of my bandmates is Laura Shine, who became a beloved disc jockey in Louisville and is still going strong at WFPK.
Really? Wow. Okay, here's a great story. Of course, a lot of people call into the show and with all of their the idioms they come up with and the strange words and expressions. One caller actually turns out to become your wife. Now, she called the show, and what was her question about?
Yeah, years ago, we got this phone call that, to be honest, I thought was really boring. She wanted to know about the difference between the words nice and kind. She's from New York, and she said, you know, I think of myself as a kind person. I don't think of myself as necessarily nice. Isn't there a difference between those two words? And so, you know, we kicked around the idea that nice is really more performative and kind comes from within, comes from a good heart. And honestly, I wanted to move on to the next call because we didn't really get to talk about etymologies. And you know, I didn't think anything of it. And then a few years later, she came to a fundraiser for our show. And I thought she looked familiar, and I said, have we met before? And she said, only on the radio. I'm the one who asked you about nice and kind. And I realized at that point that I was going to have to reassess my my evaluation of that conversation, because there were just sparks from the very beginning. And yes, 2 years later, we were married.
Now, this is Bonnie, right?
This is Bonnie, yes.
Now, does Bonnie share your passion for words?
She does, yeah. Yeah, it's a different kind of passion for words. But I know she gets a kick out of my passion for them. She she's forever asking me, you know, where this word or that word came from, and just kind of rolls her eyes because usually I tell her exactly where it came from. I don't have to go look it up.
So what's been the reaction to the book so far?
You know, David, it's been wonderful. I've been pleasantly surprised. I guess there are a lot of people out there who are friends with words, and it's been really, really wonderful. I mean, for one thing, it's been so long since I've written long form, and you know, I really started out as a writer, and you know, I will tell you this. The first time I ever announced publicly that I was going to have a book coming out was there in Evansville at the gala. And I can probably, I can't say that I have another book coming out, but I just sent a proposal to a publisher yesterday, and I'm pretty excited about the fact that I think I still have more to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, very well received at the gala, Martha. That was a wonderful evening. You guys were
Well, we had a go ahead.
No, that was very entertaining. Everybody loved it.
Well, you know, Bonnie and I had a great time in Evansville. I remember going to we had a great dinner at Comfort, I think is the name of it.
Yeah, Comfort by Cricket, I think.
Yeah, by Cricket, and I think it's by a cat cafe, if I recall.
It is, and I thought, okay. Yeah, the cat cafe is very popular, very popular.
Okay, yeah.
And those are animals from the Humane Society they take in there,
right.
And they're adopted.
Right, it was closed when we were there, but we could look in the windows, and we had a wonderful time in Audubon Park across the river.
Yes.
I love Evansville, would love to come back sometime.
Now, do you still have connections in Louisville?
Oh, yeah. I've got a brother there and his wife and a lot of good friends. I stay with friends when I go back there. And, yeah.
Now, tell me about Grant, your co-host. What's it like working with Grant?
He is a dazzling intellect. I've never known anybody to know so much about so many things. You know, it was an arranged marriage, actually. I mean, arranged radio marriage.
Sure.
Because, you know, I had been hosting the show with Richard Lederer, and then he retired, and they, again, did a nationwide search and found this hip young lexicographer in New York who was once described as looking like he was somebody who could fix your car and probably can. And so he was sort of this hot young lexicographer who joined us, and he really brought an intellectual rigor to the show. I would think that I was satisfied with an answer that I'd come up about a word origin, and he would come in with all this research that showed that that the word was actually much earlier than I had thought it was. So he's just a prodigious intellect, and he's very, very funny.
He is. Now, earlier we talked about some of the new words going into the dictionary. I'm just curious, how does a word get into a dictionary?
We get that question a lot because there are often people who think that they've found a lexical gap in English. That's what is called a lexical gap. We need a word for this or we need a word for that. And I've coined this word. And so how do I get it into the dictionary? But it's not that easy. I mean, your chances of doing so are probably right up there with winning the lottery, winning the Powerball. Because it's not a matter of just saying, I've come up with a great word. Lexicographers are very, very much about evidence. And so only if there's evidence that lots of people are using this word, lexicographers are constantly reading all kinds of publications and watching words like the ones that you brought up. Yeah, lexicographers are always looking for evidence. So they're reading widely, all kinds of publications, all kinds of things on the internet to see what people are talking about. And if enough people are using this word and using it naturally, then it's a candidate for getting in the dictionary. But just because you come up with this really clever word doesn't mean that it's automatically going to go in.
Now, when you go to events, maybe cocktail parties, do people quiz you a lot? Do they try to stump you, or is there some banter going on at these events?
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff like that. And another thing that happens is that people will come up and say, "Can you guess my accent?"
Okay.
And a lot of times we can. You know, we can hear those Midwestern vowels or get them talking about this or that, and they say they're fixing to do something, and you know they're probably from the South or, you know, things like that. In fact, in the book, I have sort of a road trip through the country where I write about different words and phrases in different parts of the country. So that's always fun. But yeah, I guess it's sort of like, being a doctor or an attorney going to a party. Sometimes you do have to cut off the questions.
Now, I'm curious, in Canada, is there a lot of different dialects in Canada? Of course, there's the French-speaking part, but have you had any calls from Canada?
Oh, we've had plenty of calls from Canada, and it's usually from the French-speaking part. And, I mean, of course, there's Newfoundland English as well. I mean, there are dialects all across Canada, and they get represented on the show. Boy, in England, I wish we had more callers from England. Those folks just listen by podcast, but there are so many different dialects in England, and I'm eager to explore more of them.
Well, my guest has been Martha Barnett. Her latest book is Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land, published by Abrams Press. Now, one of the reviews, Martha, is from Sarah Ogilvy, author of Dictionary People, and she writes, "Friends with Words is a captivating and joyous read about language, identity, and most importantly, life and love." What about the life and love part?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. First of all, I'm a huge Sarah Ogilvy fan, and everybody should read her book, The Dictionary People, which is about all the volunteers and all the word nerds who contributed to the Oxford English Dictionary. It's a fantastic read, The Dictionary People. It's also about life and love for sure. I mean, love between people and the way that we communicate with people and the way that we choose to communicate in different registers with different kinds of people. I mean, words are life, right?
They are. And some beautiful words out there, and we're discovering them in your book.
Well, yeah, that was one of the things that I wanted to do was share some of the beautiful words that I've come across, beautiful word origins or just different ways that people have found to make sense of the world. You know, you think about just confronting the chaos that is the world. You know, how do we divide it up into manageable pieces, these units that we call words, to make ourselves to understand the world ourselves, and then to make ourselves understood to other people. I mean, it's really a miracle, isn't it, that I can have a thought in my head, and it's almost as if I use words to project on the movie screen inside your head what I'm thinking. And maybe you don't get exactly what I get, but it's a pretty good observation. Or when I'm writing, making marks on a page, or just being able to communicate with a mouthful of air, that's a stunning, stunning phenomenon.
Well, your book is an adventure in language land. I know you talk about the names of the planets and the months of the year and their origins. It's really a fascinating read, and I highly recommend it. Martha, this has been a wonderful conversation, and congratulations on the new book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land, and thanks for a mellifluous conversation.
David, it's been so much fun. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thanks, Martha.
All right. You too.
Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett, co-hosts of Away with Words, were the guests at the 2024 WNIN Gala in Evansville. Here's some of the banter as I chatted with them before an adoring audience. Now, Grant, you've written books on perfect English grammar and the official dictionary of unofficial English. That's kind of a paradox.
Yeah, I'm a lexicographer. That's somebody who compiles and edits dictionaries. And so the unofficial dictionary was based upon my old website, which I just found words that I didn't think were getting enough attention in mainstream dictionaries, and I researched them and defined them, and then eventually turned it into a book. The perfect English grammar, I did not title that. The marketing people at the publisher titled that, and I warned them that as soon as you title a book perfect anything, you get emails. And I swear, the first month the book was out, I got emails going, I found a mistake on page 7. It's not perfect. And it isn't perfect. I wrote it in like 5 or 6 weeks at 3 to 5 a.m. because I had insomnia. So that's, yeah, whatever. I still get checks every year, so.
And also...
Oh, I'm writing a... Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Also, you're working on a project on the non-literal uses of the word suck.
Yes, S-U-C-K. Yeah, I'm writing a book for Oxford University Press, which is overdue, but it's just about why we say sucks and all the other variations on that and where it comes from. And it might not be sexual, it turns out.
So why do we use that word?
Are there children here? Are there people who... are physically adults, but are mentally children? I see some hands going up, pointing to their partners. The short version is that a lot of things have sucked that were negative. Like there's such a thing as a dog, a suckling dog or a sucking dog, an egg-sucking dog will break into a hen house and suck the eggs. Just like a fox, they learn that those are good eaten. And that's an insult to call something an egg-sucking dog.
Well, I would think so.
There's many more. I don't want to bore you with this. But
I'm fascinated by
read
that.
Read the book when it comes out.
That you're actually working on a project.
I know, yeah.
On the word
suck.
Yeah,
and I reached out to the Oxford English Dictionary people, and I said, what do you got that's not on your website? And they sent me, massive files. Mm-hmm. So I hope they have some good stuff in there that nobody else has.
Martha, working with this guy, what's that like?
I'm a pain in her ass.
It does not suck.
It sucks.
It does not suck, no.
That's good. I was telling somebody at our table that Martha and I have been working together so long, we're like siblings. We know exactly how to push each other's buttons.
Yep.
But we also know how we complement each other. We also know what each other's strengths are, and we're pretty good about throwing to people and saying, mm-hmm. You take it.
Oh, you want me to answer the question?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, I would agree with that for sure. I mean, we're just like, kind of like an old married couple or siblings. Okay, siblings. I mean, this man's brain is...
Don't flatter me.
No, it's true. It's phenomenal. He's one of the funniest people I've ever met. And what you see is what you get. What you hear on the radio is what you get. You can ask him... any question, and he's usually got some kind of answer.
The joke is, here's the thing. Martha and I have both learned how to say, I don't know, without saying, I don't know. So when you listen to the show, and you're like, how do they know everything? Listen more carefully. We're actually saying, I don't know, a lot.
Yeah, we'll say, what do you think?
Yeah. We'll have to put that out to our listeners. Here's the phone number.
Now, Martha, of course, we talked about you being a native Kentuckian. Your parents were both educators. Tell me about Henley and Helen. Now, Henley, I know, was a Baptist minister, right?
Yes, bless your heart for asking.
And I was the Bishop of Haymarket.
Oh, yeah, well, he worked in an impoverished area there. My dad, Henley Barnett, was a professor of Christian ethics at the Baptist Seminary there. And I was telling a couple of folks, where are they, that he married his student. Oh, yeah, I was telling some folks back there that he lost his first wife. She died. And a couple of years later, this absent-minded professor had this hot young thing in his class. And you would think that there was something a little bit untoward about this. But before my father died, he gave me a stack of their love letters from the 50s, because they had this scandalous romance. You know, it was this secret romance because he was her professor. And, you know, you kind of get this story in your head, but you look at those love letters, and it wasn't like that at all. That man didn't have a chance. My mother set her cap for that guy, and I was reading these letters to my wife, and I kept saying, "Mom," because she would be like, "I can't wait to get my hands on you."
Away with Words, featuring Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett, is on the air each week here on WNIN-FM, Fridays from noon to 1 and Sundays from 2 to 3. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Previous shows are on demand at WNIN.org.